Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Truth to Power Show. My name is Beverly D. And tonight we have Sister Seta Aset, and she is the author, and she has several books. And she is doing auto reading. She's reading from her books. And I'm going to bring Sister Seta Aset on so she can let you know what she's doing and who she is. Sister Aset, are you there?
Yes, peace, Sister Beverly. How are you tonight?
Great. How are you?
I'm chipper tonight. I'm perky.
You good. That's a good thing.
Oh, yeah. I feel good.
Excellent. Well, let the people know who is Sister Aset and let them know about your books and how they can get them.
Well, all right. My name is Seta Aset, and it sounds just like it's spelled, S-E-T-A-A-S-E-T. It's forwards and backwards, and that's the way I look at life. Sometimes I look backwards, but not too often. And I do have 5 novels out there. They are the Chemistry Trilogy, started out with 3, ended up with the first one is The Bright Light, Gathering of the Vanguard, The War, which we are reading right now, 9X, which is very interesting, and In the Realm of the Gods. And that's what I'm doing right now. So you guys can get those. You can read ahead of us if you like, but that's what we're doing right now. And you know, of course, my mentors are a lot of people. There's a myriad of enlightened ones and people that is in the dealing with the metaphysical realm that I look up to, as well as, of course, you know, and everyone should look up to themselves, because we all have it in us to discover these things. It's right here at our fingertips, because it all belongs to us. So yeah, my mentors, of course, Dr. Delbert Blair, Bobby Hemmett, very interesting man, Bill Valentine, interesting as well, and some of the others that is on my list that I cannot recall right now, but they're all up there. I suggest you guys check them out. Very interesting. Been knowing the knowledge for a while. So you can go all the way back to, I imagine, in the 60s, early 60s, maybe the late 50s when all this started, you know, when we started to get to know who we are as a people. Of course, we've been knowing it forever and a day. It's just been suppressed. So we're all gaining it back now. And that's a good thing. I'm enjoying it. I love it. As the word is, it's a good day to be alive.
Yes. All right. So what chapter are we on in the Book of War?
Okay, right now we were in part 56, I think. Right now we're in part 57. No, we passed 58. So right now we're on part 57. So, yeah, we were on part 58 on sacred ground. And what I'll do, first let me say this to everyone. This is a work of fiction, nonfiction, okay? Some of the things in here is true. Some of the things I worked around the truth, okay? This is a form of entertainment, and it is also a form of some thoughts of metaphysical items in these novels. So, you know, you can go either way. And it's up to you how you want to dissect it and think about it and you know, what you're getting from it in terms of being part of the metaphysical realm that we're in right now. Okay, I just want to get that out there. And part 58 on sacred ground, we talked about what happened when she went to, I think she confronted the Vatican, okay? And she had a problem with one of these entities that was sent by the Vatican. You know, we got enemies out there that we don't even know of. We've got metaphysical enemies. We've got enemies we can't even see, and they're there. So this was one of them. And so Femi had to deal with her, and I think she took good care of her. And, of course, you know, the man she loves was by her side with it, and he let her deal with that, and she did. So, and, you know, she was having these dreams about, you know, people really getting the worst of life as they went on. And so when she was telling him about it, he just assured her that, yeah, we'll take care of this, you know, when the time comes. But in the meantime, you know, don't even worry about it. Don't even think about it. We got this. So right now, this is where they're at. So, and it was a lot of places that were key in the world, you know, different areas in the world that were key, that was targeted, in other words. And I think we named those off last week, and I'll just rename them again. They were Africa, Turkey, Russia, Sweden, Indonesia, Canada, and Poverty Point, Louisiana. Now, how Poverty Point, Louisiana got in there, we're going to find out. Okay, now the key places that the most devastation was in Texas, Buenos Aires, Cape Town, Old Ancient Babylon, Damascus, and Los Angeles. So these are some key places that I felt when I wrote this, there's going to be some areas to this day that we need to keep our eyes on. So I don't know how you guys are going to take that, but I'm going to keep my eye on these places in the times coming up. So when she had the dream, Yeah.
I've been really looking at California. I've been really looking at California.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's one place that I've been checking out. I've also been checking out Russia. I think Russia's one of them. Of course, there's several places here in America that we need to be taking, you know, looking at, especially in the South. Also, I think, you know, we've got some places that's targeted in Canada, too. That's another place to look at as well. I really feel deep in my soul. I feel those particular places, you know, sort of deep within my, with my feelings about some things going down there. So, so that's where we are now. So they have to go figure out what's going on. So right now we're in part 57 in the cradle of the caucus. That's the title of this part, this chapter, part 57 in the cradle of the caucus. And if we're ready to go, we can go. Ready?
Yes, we're ready.
Okay. Okay, here we go. When the vanguard arrived, there was an unjustifiably massive slaying of people. But the most tragic and reported area was Russia. All across the land mass were bombings and destruction of properties that the evil Jawaks commandeered from its citizens. Now, these Jawaks are, I wouldn't say they were, well, they're not human. We know this. They're not human. They are more on the monstrosity, humanoid, monstrosity type of humanoid type of thing. And I'll describe it as we go on. Okay. The gruesome and obsessive behavior of these monsters was fueled by the leader who commanded them. With 23 eye watchers surrounding her, Femi confronted the fiendish creature. The monstrosity was gigantic in size. And this is some of these giants are coming, that's coming back. Not only did it stand 30 feet tall, but it had the power to make one believe that they are much better off trusting their government's safe haven. Once they believed this, the people were cut down like grass under the most powerful lawnmower on earth. This was the poison he spread around in some of the coldest areas in the world. He stared at them with such iciness in his eyes and a deathly glare that could pierce the most strongest of armor made in earth. That in part influenced the eye watchers to be in attack mode. Without warning, the beast lunged at Omiko, one of the fearless of eye watchers, taking her down and disabling her. Although she was hurt, she could still fight, but Femi ruled against it. To get his attention away from her, a few of the eye watchers rallied his motions toward them. Zuri and Femi began to shout at him. I am who you want. It's me your crown cross is searching for. No need in killing the people when I'm here, shouted Femi. Leaping into action with the Naamajai was off his guard. Zuri delivered one severe blow to its head, leaving it disoriented and dazed. The eye watchers went into action, taking down many soldiers of the Romanilia. And these are soldiers of the Romans. While Zuri battled the Ja'ai, Femi fought as hard as she could, taking down as many Jawaks as skillfully possible, slicing them in two. Far as her glaring golden eyes could see, they were attacking fiercely, and it seemed nothing was seriously stopping them. There were too many of them as they slaughtered the people in droves. Femi had to make a decision, and fast. Zuri delivered severe blows to the head of the gigantic trickster. Femi ordered him and the eye watchers to fly as high as they could preferably to an adjoining skyscraper, to avoid what was coming next. Omiko was safely perched near an abandoned vehicle when she was secured by Zuri. Along with the eye watchers, they all flew up to the tall building and observed Femi as she created with her scepter a raging inferno, which swept each and every one of the Jawwalks and the Romanilia away. Unfortunately, many of the people in the area had to be sacrificed to stop the onslaught. That was the good news. The bad news was that Naamajai escaped. "Where did he go? Did anyone see where it went?" asked Omiko. "I know where it's going, and we have to get there," said Femi. She spoke to Wodoon telepathically and informed him that a fiendish monstrosity was coming toward him and his eye watchers. He responded to her that one was already there, wreaking havoc upon the people of the sleeping giant. With that, Zuri turned Omiko over to the eye watcher named Roms Q, and he joined Femi and the other eye watchers as they sped off to assist Wudun in China. When they arrived, there was a mass of water overriding the land everywhere one could see. All the cities that bordered the Pacific were under the ocean. There were countless bodies floating among the debris. Nothing was as it was just hours ago. The tips of the tallest structures were only visible if you were in an airplane above. When Wudun caught sight of Femi and Zuri, he said tearfully, The people had no warning. She came in and masterfully slayed well over 1 million souls. With the help of the Jawwalks and their android cousins, they shed so much blood. It was much like the water you see around you until she caused a massive earthquake. And, well, you see what happened. "Where is she now?" asked Femi. "Inland, killing and slaying what's left of these people." "Let's go," Femi shouted. When they flew inland, the Chinese army was fighting for their lives as they were pummeled by the Romanilia, the Talisman, and the Dracons. They weren't doing the killing alone. Accompanying them was Sharibria Obi, and she hated all humans. With her power over the mind, she did whatever it took to destroy mankind. She was ushered in by the Dracons to do their bidding of supplying them with the food that sank under the sea and down 75 feet to where they made their home many thousands of years ago. Not only did they feel that the Grand Council was ridding the planet of overpopulation, but in a delicate way, supplying the Dracons with dinner. And what better way of killing a country with two birds, one with the stone for the economy and one for the people? "She's been dropping the people left and right. She's powerful," said Wodoon. "Anyone knows of her?" "Yes. Her title is the Hater of All Life. She is Sharibria Obi. She's a very vile and wicked entity and a very big problem to do away with. We all have to align together and bring them down," replied Zuri. They all joined as a bridge, holding hand to hand as Sharibra charged toward them. She used a squelching noise and her mind to send the weaker eye watchers flying away from her. They all dispersed and began fighting on the ground, taking down as many of the opposing forces as they could. While Femi and Zuri did battle with Sharibria, she paused from the fight to leave them and flew towards the Naamajai. He joined her in battle. Femi and Zuri felt compromised against Sharibria, since they were getting the better of her together. Now the game has become much more dangerous. My two lovelies, you have much more to swallow now. My name is Naama Jai, and I have left the cold of Prussia. And join me here, where I will feed all these nasty, egotistical, cowardly, tumorous, treacherous, diabolical, and vicious humans to the Drakons for dinner. Although I don't know why they would want them, laughed Cherebria. Wow, you are hilarious as hell, Cherebria. You just described yourself, and that's why we're going to put you and that thing down, said Zuri. Do you really think you can, Zuri? Last I heard, you only been in the game for a few years now. You can't come here half-stepping. I have my big girl panties on, like your goddess Femi. She's the only one who can settle this fight. Your little boy shorts will tangle up and get you eliminated, screwing with me. That's what you want, huh? To save yourself from the ass-whooping of your repulsive and scurrilous life. But you aren't going to get off that easy. Drunk with evil laughter, she said, my Naama Jai is who you want to battle. I hear you left the job undone, and your woman had to finish it. As a god, why don't you finish it yourself? He is, Cherebria. Zuri is going to kill you in a heartbeat. He will show you no mercy. And when he's done with you, he will finish the Naama Jai. And all I have to do is sit back and watch. We are 9 to the most powerful now. And you and your callous monstrosity of a being will perish, replied Femi. With a repulsive yell, Cherebra lunged towards Zuri, giving him blows on top of blows, fighting as if she was a male entity, stabbing him with her claws into his bare skin. She administered one great blow to his face and knocked him to the ground. Femi saw what happened to her better half, but she kept fighting with the Eye Watchers against the forces to capture them and bring them to their knees. Before Zuri could get up, Naama Jai raised his huge fist and beat Zuri to the ground. He repeated this action until silence came over him. Femi felt a sense of weakness come over her, but as the two bloodthirsty creatures directed their sights toward her, up out of the ground came a resurrected god, a force that nothing could touch. With the power of those before him, Zuri, in all his glowing glory, attacked with the power of many millions of life forces within him. He lunged out of the debris with lightning speed, and as he got closer to his female enemy, he automatically took hold of Cherebra's head and crushed it in his hands. Femi was ecstatically proud of her warrior, that she could hardly contain herself as she continued to beat down even harder the Jawwalks and the Romanilia. The Eye Watchers took control of the Drakons and annihilated them, striking them with their powerful golden glare and turning their slime bodies into goo. When the Naama Jai saw that Cherebria was dead, he sounded out a yell so loud that it shattered what was left of the land after the great battle had taken place. It also left many of the people who retreated inland away from the fighting area deaf. Power of the Shinahakadu, Zuri made one more leap as the creators would allow him to, and cleanly severed the head off with one stroke. The body shook the ground when it fell, and the head rolled into a ditch with the mouth and the eyes still in motion. Zuri and Femi walked over to it and looked at one another in approval. Zuri raised the sword, and with one deep breath, he jabbed it as hard as he could into the brain of the beast. This was the silence that brought the people out of hiding. When they were relieved it was over, Phimmy said to them, "Fear no more, for they will bring the enemies of their enemy down and silence them all." The eye watchers incinerated the body of Sharibria and the Naamajai. Zuri retained the head to lie at the feet of the crown cross. That was part 57, Sister Beth.
All righty. Now, what do you think the difference between human and mankind?
Well, man is a kind of human. There are several different kinds. There's a lot of different kinds. Human, to me, is a particular color of hue on a man or in a man. And that could be his color, that could be his personality. I think it could be all of those, not just the color of a particular human, but it could be all of those personality, you know, the way they carry themselves. It's just a type of man. I think it's basically the same thing, just a type of man. What do you think it is, Sister Beth?
I think that it could be melanated people, and I understand all people have some forms of melanin in them when they talk mm-hmm. about the human. And then when they talk about mankind, I feel like that's something else. It's a, you know, it could, what else is because what it says is kind of a man. So it could be an alien or a combination of AI, but it doesn't feel like, because I noticed that I'm listening to their people conversation, especially when you listen to the news and things like that, and I hear them saying mankind a lot more than I hear them saying human.
Well, I've heard them say when they so-called put their foot on the moon, and this is one leap mm-hmm. for man, one giant leap for mankind. You know,
right.
that's oxymoron, right? You know,
that's like
kind of questionable.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know.
Exactly. Yeah. So for me, and I always said this to myself, the way that our planet is right now and the people, I'm going to say the people, I'm not even going to say man or human.
Okay.
The way the people are on this planet, when the so-called they say that, you know, well, I'm only human, or, you know, I'm just human or whatever. And the attitude that these so-called humans have on this planet, it makes me, Sister Bell, I don't want to be a human. Okay? If humans going to act like they act on this planet, the way they treat each other, I don't even want to be human. I would rather be a kind of a man or kind of a woman, you know?
Okay.
And not necessarily the so-called scary alien kind. But when you look at the so-called human do what they do here, you want to disassociate yourself with them. That's the way I feel. Too much. It's too much.
Maybe we all are aliens, some form, you know, different species or different forms of aliens.
We're definitely different from some of these people, the way they act on this planet. And you know which ones I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we are forgiving, loving type of people. You know,
yeah,
no matter what you throw at us and our culture, you know. And we've endured that for many millions of years. So if they call themselves human and the things that they do to man, you know, then I don't want to be their type of human. If that
well,
makes
it's
any
just
sense.
Something to think about, you know, because I keep hearing, I keep hearing mankind a lot, and I keep hearing, you know, and I don't hear, seem like I used to hear humans more so than I hear mankind, but it seems to, I hear mankind more so now than ever before. And as you were talking about the beast, and they called Trump, his automobile, his limousine that he ride in, they call it the beast, because, you know, I was looking at when he was over in India, and they were saying how here the beast come. So it's just another correlation in your book with a lot of things that goes on today. So we could go.
Well,
to
you know,
the next
when the
chapter. Uh-huh. Go
okay,
ahead.
I wanted to say,
go
you
ahead.
Know, with the first so-called black president that we had, you know. His car, his limousine was the beast. So I think he just kind of inherited. Yeah, they called Obama's car limousine the beast. And that's when they first basically created it, because by him being the so-called first black president, oh, they thought he was really going to be assassinated or blowed up or something. So that's when they created the beast for him. Yeah, that car. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now that Trump's riding in it, you know, he's just as vulnerable as Trump was, you know, because of, you know, what he's going through right now. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they're saying it's just, I mean, it's bomb-proof, bullet-proof, and all other kind of stuff. The tires don't
yeah.
get flat and everything. It's, to me, it's like it's even stronger than a tank.
They say it is a tank, but it just has a car exterior.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But were there any questions on the last chapter that you were interested in asking about? Or? And it is weird. This is weird now that I'm reading this stuff, because I kind of mentioned China was where they was fighting it, and I,
yes.
you know, and I that was kind of weird for me. Reading
and Russia too. You know, you mentioned and, that in the last, but Russia, yeah.
Yeah, they started in Russia, and then they had to go to China. That is so weird. I just, and
mm-hmm.
I haven't read these since I put them out, since I printed them. So, but anyway, that's weird for me. Okay, so we'll go on to the next one? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, the next one is part 56, Daku Aina Dalku. And that is Latin. And I didn't put what it means in parentheses, but I know it's somewhere in my library. I got to get it out. Part 56, Daku Aina Dalku. The fighting continued, spreading death, fear, and loathing. Millions of souls around the world perish, and there was no easing up. The Crown Cross was out for blood, literally. And it didn't matter whose blood had to be spilled, as long as they made their point. They were the rulers of the planet. The Vanguard was performing with a skeleton crew on all fronts, with Zuri on the side of the planet and Femi on the other. And you know, in that last chapter, he came up and he proved who he was. He didn't play, so I'm very happy about that. He was good. Okay, once they regained control of India and Australia, Femi and Zuri's focus brought them back together in the countries of Europe. The atmosphere was a scorching 118 degrees all over the planet when many of the Androidian talismen began to lose their functions and melted down simultaneously. This caused a slight problem for the Crown Cross's worldwide army of mindless creatures. But like locusts, there seemed to be an endless update supply of them. The Dracons began to retreat back into the waters off the coast, off the Pacific coast, only to regroup with a fresh new swarm of monstrous creatures. Within the thousands of talismans, jawwalks, and Dracons, there was an entity in the fray that was ordering and giving commands to these armies. When Zuri confronted him, he had the look of a boy, a boy who aged before his time. His skin was solid white, dotted with black spots and wrinkles, like a mastiff. And a mastiff is this huge dog with all this stuff hanging down on him. I think that dog is out of China, but anyway, let's go on. His hair was as black as a piece of coal. His eyes were pink in color. They flew upon him while his back was turned. He said, "I'm glad you two could join me. I wouldn't want you to miss witnessing the elimination of the worst creation known to the universe." "If you mean the creation of mankind, no, I don't want to miss what you are about to do. But it's neither up to me nor you to decide their fate. I was called back from destroying every living thing on earth, and in time, I understood why. We are not the creators of them. There is a higher power who instructs us. I have to stop you from your merciless, vindictive ways of killing all things," said Femi. "Try if you like, as I enjoy a good spanking, especially from a girl," said Geryon Derber, the boy demon. His goal was to attack and infect the people into submission with a deadly disease that would spread throughout the Eastern world. The vulnerability made a better kill for him and his minions, courtesy of the draconian ruler of Wallerstein. "You got this, my goddess?" asked Zuri. "No problem," she replied. Zuri flew off to assist in staving off thousands of enemy soldiers. Geryon Derber turned to her and gave off a stench from his mouth that would kill any living thing in its path. With fast action, she shielded her body with a sliver of gold. The stench made its way out into space and away from the earth. The Derber attempted several times to poison her, but each time she managed to defy him. He began to fire white lasers toward her, missing her and wearing himself out. His power began to dwindle as he once again fired his lasers and his stench. The only ability he had left was to charge into her. Speeding as fast as he could, he sent her into the icy cold waters of the North Sea. As they fought under the water, she created great tsunamis that destroyed the coasts of Norway. Ireland, Great Britain, France, Denmark, Spain, Portugal, and the northwest cap of Africa. The people really had nowhere to run in such a short amount of time. The fighting was merciless. No one was safe. With the fighting on the ground as well as in the waters, there was nowhere to go. Great metropolis were destroyed and eviscerated with each strike the Eye Watchers and Zuri gave to the opposition. Ancient and familiar landmarks were destroyed. The new and sophisticated constructions were reverently obliterated. Nothing stood high or low. Every building was either crumbling down or on fire. It was ground level zero. Then a very strange thing occurred. Zuri and the Eye Watchers observed the combative entity stop in the middle of their fight and began to assemble with a very expedient march toward the south. Zuri looked all around for Femi. Just at the point of him diving into the sea, she flew up out of the water quickly to witness the enemy's army abandoning the war-torn landscape. There was no saving anything or anyone after a desolate battle, as this one was. It was worse than a nuclear explosion. The land was barren, and no human survived. If they did, they returned to the Caucasus Mountains. It looked as though the enemy got his wish. Did you kill him? No, he escaped me. He is so old, he can barely contain his energy. So he ran like a child, said Femi. When the eye watchers joined them, there was a quietness and a peace in the air. Gaia had been cleansed. But Femi felt a great tugging in her spirit to leave this place quickly. We must go. There's trouble at home. Hurry, she shouted. Femi and Zuri flew up into the heavens while the eye watchers rode their scatnaps as fast as they could go. They all rushed toward the motherland of Africa. The reason given for the title motherland was that the continent sat in the middle of a Pangaea millions of years ago, which means the landmass was one as a whole. Moments later, when they all met, the motherland was literally getting blown to hell. There were droves of people everywhere. They were scurrying here and there, taking cover wherever they could. Men, women, and children of all races were running and covering their heads from all of the bombing and the shootings. Mass murder was in effect for the entire continent. Femi's nemesis, Geryon Derver, was present and causing havoc, but there seemed to be new enemies joining him and the rest of the tyrannical and foul pack of aberrant creatures. Green and yellow football-shaped crafts were flying and circling with such precision that even a few of the Eye Watchers' small riders almost collided with them. Showing a bit of rust from the waters off the Pacific, there was no slowing them down as they fired their artillery at whoever they directed it to. There were several hundred of these ships, and like the birds in the skies, they were everywhere, as far as Femi and Zuri could see. The job at hand would prove to be a very big one, but they knew the planet was in jeopardy if they did not stand up to the powerful disagreeables who rain their heretical treachery on the people of Earth. The vanguard sprang into action over the country of Libya. Fighting with skill and thought, Femi, glowing as a beacon of light, activated her scepter and lined up 50 of the fiery crafts. She set them ablaze and pointed them in the direction of the Mediterranean Sea. She crashed them all in the waters. Zuri, using his skill of flying, mounted the crafts one by one, breaking and covering over the operator's cockpit with the sword of the Nibu, and seized the Dracon inside, therefore causing the ship to crash and burn. He disabled more than 100 of them in a short amount of time. Meanwhile, the Eye Watchers were blasting their lasers in the air at the craft, causing them to spiral out of control and crash while fighting hand-to-hand combat on the ground. Once several of the Draconian ships were at a minimum, Zuri joined the melee alongside his soldiers. With an ever-so-angry Geryon Derver watching his diabolical army of murderers fall one by one, he flew toward Femi with fire in his eyes. He shouted, "It's far from over, the B word. I will never stop coming for you. I am here, Geryon Derver, in your face. If you think you can defeat me, try it. With a sniveling, scared, running little child like you, take your best shot," she replied, with arms open wide. Geryon, in a fit of anger, flew as hard as he could, spewing his poisonous gases at her, missing her once again as she fired her scepter's electrical power at his back when he flew past her, disorienting himself. He began to fall to the ground with lightning speed. Once he realized what was happening, he gained control seconds before he touched down and flew back up to face her once again. Laughing, Femi said, "So, you love punishment, Geryon. I always thought you was a little freaky. It's a known fact that those who wallow in the mud are the freakiest of all." With as much anger as one could muster, he loudly screamed at the top of his throat and charged once again. And once again, he was saved by the crafts of the Drakons entering into their theater. Laughing back at her, he said, "I must go, dear Femi. I will leave you and your saviors to my friends. Hope to see you soon, that is, if you can survive what's about to happen to you." He flew off again, flying further south into the continent, leaving the vanguard to vigorously fight for their lives. Hails of fire and lasers were raining down. Smoke and brimstone covered the entire countryside. They were in dire need of more soldiers, but as it was, they were spread out to protect and serve those under the barrier. Femi called out to the ancestors. It seemed as though the vanguard had all they could take, until high above came a blast like no other they had seen, striking the draconian crafts, incinerating them as if they weren't there. "What kind of power is this?" Femi asked herself. Zuri joined her side, and just as they were both questioning it, they were given the answer. It hovered in front of them. Telepathically, the soul inside said, "I am a Radlugal, and I am a descendant of Enki, the Sumerian lord of the earth. I was sent to aid you in this fight of the survival of the planet. We know why the creators have appointed you." Okay, Sister Beth, that's the end of that chapter.
Okay, and I want to tell the listeners that they want to continue to listen. We have 12 minutes left, and they can call on the phone, 323-642-1586, and also push number one if you have a question or comment about what Sister Seta has read, or any questions or comments that you want to share with the audience. And now, you had a lot going on in that chapter there. Now, again, correlating to what's going on now, you talked about the disease. You talked about the East Coast, you know, and that's what we're dealing with.
Yeah, that's kind of freaky to me too, Sister Bev. Like like she was telling Harriet, it was a little freaky. I haven't, like I said, I haven't touched these novels. I haven't done anything to them since I put them out there. And I'm just, you know, thinking to myself, you know, what have I done here? And, you know, I don't know what I did here. I just wrote it. So I don't know.
And that's what I want the listeners to see, because this is how spirit works. You know, when you open up and the spirit will work through you, it uses you as a vessel. And this is a prime example. You wrote this book a few years ago, but it's like and you're reading it now. And right now, it's like you can see the correlation between what you wrote years ago and what's going on now. And also, it's showing here too that you're dealing with warriors. And so it's showing,
yes,
male, female. It doesn't even matter if you're a female, you're a warrior. And it's like, mm-hmm, you can't be afraid of this entity or this opposition, mm-hmm, that's here. You've got to fight it. Because if you don't, mm-hmm, I mean, you just going to get massacred, as you say, or, you know, slaughtered. So it's showing,
yeah, exactly,
you that you got to be a warrior, you know. And I understand everybody is not warriors, but the ones that are warriors have to step up, you know, and be what they are. And that's what this is showing here, too.
Exactly. We all have to be as a hive mind, thinking in one way. And, you know, not necessarily that everything has to be agreed on, but that just that one thing that bonds us all together is what we have to work on. That's the only way we're going to get over this. That's the only way we're going to survive. And when I do this, this is more like We don't have to conquer like this. What we have to use is conquer with our minds. We have to go back and kind of let go of some of this, things that we use, like the telephones. And then we got to start thinking through each other telepathically, like we used to do, because, you know, in within us highly melanated people, we have a thing called nine ether. And they did all this artificial stuff to cut our nine ether within ourselves down. You know, they didn't want us to have this. You know, once upon a time, drums were outlawed, and we go by the beat of the drum. You know, we always have, but, you know, the way that they've done the music. And to me, all music, it's not like it used to be. Everything is artificial. You got artificial music now, which affects our nine ether. And, you see the children in the phones, they got the headphones, and they're just somewhere else. And, it's really attacking our children. It's even attacking our grown folks, you know, because we always got our heads stuck down in the phone when we should be talking to each other through our minds. And we can, if all our nine ether haven't been destroyed, hopefully we can gain it back by putting some of this stuff down. Now, I know that we're talking on the call. You know, I know that. We have to do that right now. And it's a must that we need to use these things to get the information out, but we got to get the right information out if we're going to use these things. Because, go ahead, Sister Beth.
Sister Sada, someone in the chat room is asking for your email.
Oh, okay. The email, okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. The email is chemistryfiles@gmail.com. That's chemistry, K-E-M-E-T-S-T-R-Y, files@gmail.com. And the website is basically the same. It's chemistryfiles.com.
Yeah. And also you show in your writing, too, that, you know, even though they're fighting, you know, this entity, then they had help came, you know, with this fight.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it be. Yeah. You know, you don't know where it come from, but it comes and you get that extra help that you need, too.
Exactly. And it can come in all forms too. But
mm-hmm.
you know, when you get that help, you have to be careful as well. Now, as we go on in the war, it's gonna come out that, you know, they're gonna be good with this. They're gonna be okay. It's not another curve thrown, you know, around the corner. So everything is going to be pretty good. It's going to be okay. So I don't want everybody to think that, oh God, here comes another plot, whatever. No, everything is going to be okay. But yeah, when we need help, it comes out of nowhere. And you're right.
Yeah.
You're certainly right. Yeah. And I think we can do that today if we put our heads to it. Yeah.
Huh. Go say that again.
Mm-hmm.
Say it again.
I said we can do that today, because if we as highly melanated people get ourselves together and make it happen like that, we're going to see all kind of help coming out of nowhere to help us. But we have to be careful, as I said before. But I think that that's possible. That's a big possibility.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, and we haven't figured it out where it's coming from. We call it spirit, but we don't know. It could be other aliens. We really don't know. We just find,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're awakening and we're seeing what's going on. So it'll be revealed to us. I just feel like that's what's happening now. Things are being revealed at this time. So I think
exactly.
We could do one more chapter if you want.
Oh, okay. And it's good that we're stopping right here, because that's kind of like in the middle of the book. So that's good.
Okay.
Here we go. Part 55, Kurgal. The ancestors heard you. and we came when we heard them cry. You are not alone, nor was you ever. Nibiru is just on the other side of the sun. We've been waiting there for this day, this time. Now the great awakening has arrived, and all that is now to exist. Get the people ready, because after this last war is over, we are going to re-terraform Gaia. The creators were always by our side, and even when it looked as though the dark-hearted ones were defeating us, I welcome you. We welcome you, Arad Lugal. Let your army of flyers, fighters, destroy and roll back the haters of life and Mother Earth. Many of the Sumerian ships began to chase and cripple many of the Draconians, driving them back up into the outer atmosphere and not allowing them to retreat back into the sea. With weapons ablaze, Femi and Zuri was laying a heavy fight on the ground, slaying the enemy. Toe to toe, the fight went on with the mastery of the martial arts in combination with her scepter. Femi lay several hundred on the ground. Zuri skillfully handled the sword of the Nibu with its pulsing gold, chopping and slicing any foe it came in contact with. He laid out many, too numerous to count, as the toll rose in less than a few moments. The majority of the Sumerian ships assisted the Eye Watchers while they destroyed what was left of the repulsive monsters. The remaining ships departed for the mountains of the moon, with Femi and Zuri aboard. For a fact, Femi knew Geryon had his sights set on destroying the very thing she loved, they loved. They were going home and leaving this desolate, loathsome, and unkept atmosphere to the vile. The vile ones were hiding at this point, as their plans to leave the planet failed miserably. These are the ones who tried to claim status as the gifted, the chosen, the ones who claim they are the elite. Flying high above the clouds, Femi led the battalion toward the south and along the way down to assist many of the rebellious citizens who were fighting for their lives at the hands of the Jawwalks. See, the people were fighting too. They were no match until they saw from high above the ships that Femi and Zuri led down to the war. Once they saw help arrive, the people kicked it in gear, finishing off what was left of the talisman. Femi could hardly contain her fears as her people at the mountain were under constant bombardment of attacks at every angle, almost ripping a tear in the barrier. The assault was the worst she had seen ever since the war begun. What caught her eye was Geryon Derver. He was attempting to enter the tear as it became more and more evident that the seal was unstable. The Dogon and many of the brethren surrounding her father and Abdul as they were preparing for his entry. When they looked and saw her and Zuri, the people began to concentrate on transferring all their powers to their king and queen. The barrier began to reseal itself, giving its occupants the sense of security to regroup. Geryon looked up to see Femi hovering above him with Zuri waiting in the wings to rip him apart. So, you found me again. Yes, Geryon, this time I'm done with you. I refuse to allow you to escape me again. Not only have you destroyed many lives, you've come to my home, my backyard, our backyard, and tried to eliminate my people. Geryon, I'm going to annihilate you once and for all. Destroying me will not solve all your problems, my dear. You're going to make it worse for yourself. You've already killed the Na'amajai and Sharibra Obi. You sent Babi Iya to the outer rim of oblivion. So whatever you think you can do to me is only going to make life here on this planet a living hell to the remaining humans after you and I have departed. Well, now, at least I know you'll be gone, and you will not live to tell the tale of how I kicked your ass. Geryon Derver took a stance while Femi began to glow up and sizzle in a gold hue. Zuri began to sizzle when he moved to the rear of Geryon. His sword came online, sending out the electrical current of lasers at the tip of it. Femi's scepter generated its currents inside the circle of light of the Ankh and at each end of its tips. The extended end of the scepter became a terrifying laser lightning rod. Watching the impending fight between the three superpowers was the people inside the barrier, and the children especially were rallied up to see their leaders go against the one who attacked them while they were off their guard and not expected the assault. While the Sumerian ships were blasting the Drakons and chasing them out of the mountain, the Eye Watchers from the north flew in on their scat nav to give support to the few that returned with Femi. Creating the illusion of disappearing, Geryon tried to escape once again, but he was apprehended by one of the Eye Watchers, of which he ran into on the ground. He had much more flexibility to escape his captor by poisoning him to death. This Eye Watcher was a young one who wasn't prepared to go into battle and fight entities that were extremely powerful and much more ruthless than one could imagine. Femi felt his life force leave the planet, and like a mother who's lost a child, she felt a weakening in her spirit. Zuri sensed the same and came over to give her his support. Geryon Durban managed to tuck his tail under him and escaped again. Leaving the Sumerians and the remaining Eye Watchers to clean up the mess the invaders left behind, Femi and Zuri took time to go inside the cap. They gathered up the fallen watcher and gently carried him in. When they entered through the gate, she fell into her mother's arms and wept for him. She wept for all the innocent. "My darling child, even though you have grown into a beautiful young woman and your king, a handsome man, you both have the strength to overtake any enemy that tries you. You both were gifted that by the creators. You were gifted to know of no death, physically or mentally. You are the Ansars to many of our people as time goes on, which never stops. When one of us falls, we all feel the hurt. And when one does, there are nine to replace him. You know of this, daughter. Why do you fret? Mother, when they do fall, you knew of the character, the love, the passion, and full life of the one that had for the people. It reminds me of a thousand stars that shine above in a beautiful pattern, and when one ceases to shine, the pattern becomes incomplete. But I know there will be another, one who I will personally groom to complete the pattern again, and it will be stronger than ever. Later that day, the Kaaba was filled to capacity as the people of the mountain, including the Sumerian fighters, all gathered to bid Shakir, the young fearless one, as he was called, a fond farewell in the most respectable fashion possible. After the Banark was spoken over his body by the Hogan, he was then transferred to one of the Sumerian crafts. Femi, Zuri, Leo, Abdul, and several Dogon boarded it along with Aradlugal. They flew far past the Milky Way galaxy, and there they bid him a farewell. His body was jetted into the cosmos. All was silent on their return as Femi made a promise to herself that no more will they have to render unto a ceremony as this again, absolute, and seeking the whereabouts of Geryon Durban. The fighting continued in Africa as a sea of jawwalks and mindless British talismen combed the land in search of more destruction. More and more, the Drakons were showing up, whether in their ships or on the ground in combat. One of the strongest of mankind was adding to the fight as it progressed during the long and continuous new day that followed, for there was no more night. The highly melanated ones who, at the mid-noon hour, believed in a government that was for its people but just by a hair found out that it was all a lie, a deceitful, foul lie that nearly killed them all. But a black dot was still present as they took arms and fought side by side with the mountain and the vanguard. Many of the men in the camp emerged from its protection. They took the opportunity to use their gifts to join in and take down many Dracons that surrounded them. And this was the motivating factor the Warsapian leader wanted to destroy. Whatever was in there, along with three ships that was at the command of Femi's voice, proved to be of some very importance to the Ponticlete. He wanted to kill that mountain. He wanted to dynamite it down to a hill. He even hoped for volcanic activity if he had the power to erupt one. He was never giving up at his request to destroy her and vowed someday to return. Everything in the path fighting was reduced to rubble. Country upon country, city upon city in Africa was destroyed, demolished, gone. Piles of debris and human remains lay as far as the eye could see. The putrefying stench of hundreds of battles seemed to permeate the air. Ash, fire, and smoke blackened the skies, even though Saul and his companions shone as bright and blinding as they could. There was no blue heaven to look up to, and the Nubians were the only people who kept fighting to hold on to the last vestige of humanity they had left. Okay, that's the end of that part, Sister Bam. Any questions
on
that one?
Well, it's just that we got all kind of soldiers. So we have the elite, we have the foot soldiers. It's just that we have to be able to battle this entity. And to me, it mm-hmm. seems like that this entity could be trying to, if not it's an individual thing, but it seems like it could be something that wants to take over the earth.
Yeah, when they have their space force or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, it's always mm-hmm. it's some. I do believe right now it's some fighting going on that we can't see that's up there.
Yes,
I think they're fighting now. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. I believe that, and I I feel like that is different. Like when you have an army. You have foot soldiers, generals,
mm-hmm.
Captains, you know, and I just think that that's what's going on. Everybody got to fight because everybody is at risk. If they destroy the earth,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's
yes.
going to be all of us that's here. So we all have our different role to play, to fight.
Right. And that's
too.
What's going on here. Yeah.
Yeah.
The
yeah,
people are fighting. Everybody is fighting in this.
Yeah, yeah. And I definitely believe there's something that's going on that's not visible to the eye, not our regular eyes here. That's why it's so important that we need to get into our third eye, our spiritual eye, however you want to call it, so we are able to really see what is going on.
Exactly, because as we level up, and we're out of,
yes.
I feel we're in a different reality right now. The reality
mm-hmm.
is not the same as when I was a child. It's totally
mm-hmm.
different, and it is getting faster and faster. And
yes.
I think as
yes.
we awaken, the more we awaken, the more things are going against us. It's almost like preventing us from seeing this, you know. Whatever is against us don't want us to see what's happening, don't want us to talk and have the conversations that we're having now with each other. You know, that's why they keep throwing all these distractions and things toward us, because they don't want you to see what's happening. You know, they want to throw this energy out here, you know, to keep us distracted. To me, because I've always said, you know, attention flows where energy goes. And so they want us to look left, but we need to be looking right. And everything that is happening, that has been done, we need to look at it in the opposite view. And
that's
I think
true.
The opposite view, yeah, is what we need to be looking at. Because, you know, we used to read instead of left to right, we used to read
mm-hmm.
right to left. I think we need
right.
to go back from right to the left. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. But all of this is we're being awakening. I do feel like that we're in this duality where we are, you know, asleep, but we also being awakening at the same time. So we being attacked,
mm-hmm.
but we also being awakened at the same time. So, you know, as Wes always say, it's a good time to be alive, especially if you are leveling up, as you say, especially if you are your consciousness is rising. And you don't get
exactly
into the lower level energy that is there. Because if
yeah,
you rise,
you know,
you could go up in space where they at or wherever it is. It could be like Tugmo said, that it could be in the water. It could be below us. Wherever is that, once you start to elevate yourself, you will be able to see. You will be able to, you know, you don't have to take other people's word for it. You can see for yourself.
Exactly. And we have to get the mentality of Femi and Zuri, you know, in this novel, they're being attacked at all sides. So I
exactly.
feel like right now, today, we're being attacked from all sides.
Exactly.
And so,
and that's why we got to bring ourselves up. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know,
we
need to let... go ahead, Sister Beth.
No, you go ahead.
Now, what I was going to say is we, even though we're in a different dimension than we were before, we need to start thinking new. Because if everything is becoming new and renewing itself, then that's where our minds need to go. We need a new
yeah.
way of thinking. And it's nothing wrong in knowing what your culture is, you know, and how far, you know, who built this, the pyramids and all this stuff. Well, that's already been done. We've done that. We've been there. We've done that. Now we got to start creating, you know, we need to create, you know, and start thinking and having a new way of thinking. We can't keep doing the same thing over and over and over again. And that's good that we know that we built the pyramids. That's good that we know that we were here first. That's good that we know all the things that we know. But now we got to go forward and start creating again, or we just going to be stagnant in the things
yeah.
that we've already known.
And for those that didn't listen to the show yesterday, listen to it, because I had Renee Hamilton on, and that's exactly what he was explaining, how to get out of that mold, how everything is constantly renewing itself. And that's what we have to do. Our thinking has to constantly be renewing it. That's how you create. So
well, you know,
you
Sister Bev,
mm-hmm.
go ahead. No, I was just thinking when you said that, I was thinking this has been many years back. I think this, you know, the birth of Facebook, because I, you know, first kind of got on Facebook maybe the first maybe 2 or 3 years when they started it. And there was this sister, and I think she was one of those Moors. And, you know, they was talking about what we have done and everything and our history and our past and all of this and everything. So I made a comment on there saying that we know about our history. We know what we've done. We've been there. We've done that. Now we need to move on. We need to, you know, we know this. We need to take that, you know, and of course, don't forget it, but we need to move on. We need to do something new now. That's in the past. And don't you know she cussed me out? And I'm like, oh, okay. That's one of them folks. All right.
Yeah.
They just don't understand.
She,
yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. She was vibrating on a different vibration. And that's why you can't get
yeah.
mad at people. You know, when once you understand that people vibrate on different levels. So, you know, she wasn't on the level that you were vibrating on. That's why she couldn't understand what you were saying.
Exactly. I guess she felt like, well, you know, if you don't like what your people did, I love what our people did because our people did everything that everybody else doing that's not one of us. It came from us. Like old boy said, you know, we are magic. You know, everything and everybody on this planet will turn to us for everything because we've already done it. So, I was talking to my grandbabies, you know, and they into the little rap and all this, little girl rap and all this stuff. And I was explaining to them, you know, they're just now, rap has been out for what? Almost 40 years, maybe older than that. And so, but now they're doing it and they're just now getting to it. And I was telling them, we've already been there and done that. This is nothing new to us, even though you guys, you know, are young. But they didn't know the history. So we have to teach our children about the history, too, so they'll get it.
Yeah, but see, we don't. We teach the history, but we have a tendency to stay there. You know, it's okay.
Yeah, to stay stagnant, yeah.
Yeah, but you got to be in the now, you know, because this
right,
is
where
the magic
them, I said,
is at.
Yeah. Right, we've done that, so we're moving on now. It's time for us to create, you know, some different type of things. And I think, you know, as far as the music go, I think we need to go back to that hurts that we had before they changed everything, you know, because they changed the hurt in the music to throw us off, to get us out of our nine ether. That was the purpose for that, you know. And, you know, I think about when Einstein, you know, talked this string theory, you know, of the highly melanated people, we are connected. We are connected with the universe. We are connected with nature. We're connected by strings to nature and to the universe. And, you know, to me, they've always tried to break those strings. As a matter of fact, they're doing it now. They're breaking our strings from what we are connected to naturally and to the universe. That's what that string theory was about when I think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to return back. We need to return back and create from there. Because when we were there, look at all the creation that we did create. We can do that again and more.
And the way Renee Hamilton explained it, we're still there because it's never a past or future. It's always a now.
Mm.
And that's our problem. We go in the past, we go in the future, and we very rarely want to be in the now. But this is where your control is at. This is where your magic, this is where it's all at. In the now, you can't change nothing from the past or the future because you haven't got there yet. But what you do now, this is where your power is at, and that's what we have to get into.
Exactly. But that's what Femi and Zuri is doing here in the chemistry. And so it's getting more and more exciting as we go. It's a lot of stuff happening here. A lot of stuff.
Okay. Well, thank you, Sister Seta. Seta. I like how you got it both ways. One word is going right and the other word is going left, but they both mean the same thing. That's perfect. So we look forward to hearing from you again next Thursday. We'll be here at the same time, 9:00 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And thank you for sharing your talent with us, sister. Until then, peace and love.
Thank you, Sister Betty. Peace. Yeah. Don't you feel it? Right at the end of the yeah. Don't you feel it?
Perfect. right at the end of the day, I see things coming my way. It's not pretty, it's not good, it's nothing like you thought it would. The boogeyman is here, so now you got to prepare. Win or lose, it's all up to you. So what you gonna do, what you gonna do? The world is not like it was before. It used to be so much more. But the aliens are back to throw us all off track. What, you didn't think you had enemies? There's no such thing as frenemies. It's changed for the worse, and you are under the curse. Your ancestors left it for you. So now what you gonna do? You feel it all around you. Your essence got a hold of you. No more sneaking, telling lies, because you realize there's something happening here, producing fake fear.
Oh, I'm scared.
But don't shed no tears. Just get your shit in gear. Truth is coming down on you. Then you gotta make your own truth. Know your right mind. Your future is the time. Don't become their food.
Eat you.
All they wanna do is snack you. Demonic spirits came down. In 9/11, they came to town. So be ready. So be sure. Survival time is on the menu. Empower yourself. Prepare yourself. Do yourself. Be yourself. Then if that means come hard with the knowledge, then go hard.
Go hard.
Can you feel it?